today's HSR Cyber Seminar. Today's session is Effects of Clinical Resource Hubs on Primary Care Quality and Access in the Veterans Health Administration. Our presenters today, our first presenter is Dr. Amy O'Shea. She's a biostatistician with the Veterans Rural Health Resource Center in Iowa City. And she's with the VA Office of Rural Health and Center for Access and Delivery, Research and Evaluation. I'm joined by Dr. Shelley Wheat, who is a research statistician with PCAT at the VA Puget Sound Healthcare System. And they are joined by Dr. Terrence Liu, who is currently pursuing a health services research fellowship through the University of Michigan as part of the National Clinician Scholars Program. And Dr. O'Shea, can I turn things over to you?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that very kind introduction. And thank you all for attending our presentation, either live or through the recording. We're so happy that you are here. So first of all, the three presenters, myself, Dr. Wheat, and Dr. Liu, we have no disclosures to report. And here you're seeing our funding, which all of us are funded by the VA Primary Care Analytics Team. And then I also have funding through the VA Office of Rural Health in Iowa City and the HSR&D through Comprehensive Access and Delivery Research and Evaluation Center. As always, the views expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the position or policy of the VA or the US government. And here's an outline of our presentation. So I will start today by describing the VA's National Clinical Resource Hub CRH initiative. I'll summarize some study design and results from the evaluation of CRH and primary care access. Shelley will summarize study design and results from the evaluation of CRH and primary care quality. And Terrence will also discuss some next steps in the quality evaluation. So first, let's start by talking about clinical resource hubs. This is an intervention to address staff shortages and improve primary care access. Despite rising primary care demand, especially among aging baby boomers, primary care provider vacancies are projected to increase. This is an important problem because access has a direct impact on preventative and chronic disease management in primary care. And it's also especially relevant for rural and other underserved areas who are especially vulnerable to staffing shortages resulting in declines in veteran access to primary care. The National CRH program launched in 2019 as part of VA's response to the Mission Act, and it's primarily focused on providing staffing coverage for VA clinics that experience non-catastrophic but unpredictable gaps in staffing. It is a regional primarily telehealth intervention that provides primary care and other services, including mental health and specialty care, using a hub and spoke model. But today we're going to focus on primary care. Now, what is a clinical resource hub? It's a VISN level directed resource that provides primary care, the focus of today's talk, as well as mental health and specialty staffing. Each VISN employs providers and staff for the hub, and hubs deliver mostly virtual care synchronously to clinics not located near the hub. So your natural next question is, okay, well, what is a hub? A spoke site is a clinic served by the hub. It's a clinic that's experiencing a staffing deficit, has approved to receive hub clinical services. It can either be a VA medical center, a community-based outpatient clinic, or other outpatient services. Care provided by the hub can be via telephone, video to clinic, otherwise known as clinical video telehealth, video to the veteran's home, typically through VA Video Connect, or in person when a mobile deployment team has been sent. The type of care provided is primary care, mental health, pharmacy services, or specialty care. But again, today we're going to be focusing on primary care. Most of you have probably experienced primary care in your life. High quality primary care is the provision of whole person, integrated, accessible, and equitable healthcare by interprofessional teams. Primary care is typically the person you see for your annual physical. It's the person who's a gateway to other specialties of care. Interprofessional teams are accountable for addressing your health and your wellness needs across settings and through sustained relationships with your patients, families, and communities. Now, it's important as a part of primary care that we have continuity, comprehensiveness, and coordinated care, and that primary care is typically the first contact for patients, and again, a gateway to these other care modalities. Our work here is through the Clinical Resource Hub National Evaluation. This evaluation is coordinated by the Primary Care Analytics Team in Seattle, which is why all of us are affiliated with PCAT. The overall design of the evaluation is based on the REAIM framework. This REAIM framework stands for Reach, Effectiveness, Adoption, Implementation, and Maintenance. And there are 5 CRH evaluation component teams. The teams include implementation, which is about patient and provider experience, access to care, which is what I'll be talking about today, cost and utilization, quality of care, which is what Shelley and Terrence will be talking about, and mental health care. So let's jump right into the Clinical Resource Hub primary care access. So first of all, our objectives with this study. CRH has important implications for access to primary care. Again, the whole goal of CRH is to provide coverage when gaps exist. And when gaps exist in primary care, it can affect your ability to get subsequent care. Remember, primary care is a gateway. So to understand the impact of the CRH program on primary care access before and after implementation is our primary objective. And we also want to answer the question, will CRH services increase or decrease wait times in primary care? In terms of our study design, so this is a retrospective observational longitudinal study. We're using propensity score match CRH sites and control sites. We'll talk about this a little bit more next. That propensity score match is based on facility characteristics and patient characteristics. We're assessing 3 different access metrics. I'll go into more detail on those in a couple of slides. And we'll evaluate that by using a comparative interrupted time series analysis. All the outcomes are measured at the clinic month level. So when you're thinking about how we're describing the analysis, just remember it's all aggregated to the clinic and the month. Our observational period begins on October 1st of 2018, and we have 1 year of pre-implementation. So this is before the clinical resource hubs are officially rolled out. Then starting October 1, 2019, implementation of clinical resource hubs happen. And then you're all aware the COVID-19 pandemic also begins in late February and March of 2020. We're going to end our study in February of 2020, which means we have 5 months of post-implementation timeframe. And the reason that we're doing that is because if you recall, when the COVID-19 pandemic initially happened, a lot of care was shut down, more difficult to obtain, people were scared to go get appointments. And so when you're looking at outcomes related to patient access, such as wait times just dramatically dropped because people were choosing not to get care. That's not very reflective of reality. And we do have some future work looking at the post-pandemic timeframe, but we'll be looking here just at pre and post-implementation between October 1, 2018 through February 28th of 2020. If you're not familiar with a comparative interrupted time series analysis, I wanted to give you a very brief description of what that looks like. So in this study, we have 2 different groups, CRH users and controls. And then we have a pre-implementation and a post-implementation. You can think of this as a line, a break where the CRH program begins. And our goal is to look at how these access metrics change over time before and after implementation, as well as across the 2 different groups. So, how did we define a CRH user in a control clinic? This is a very important distinction. So what we did was we defined something called meaningful use. We decided as a CRH evaluation team that in primary care, meaningful use would be represented by clinics that use at least 10 or more CRH visits per month for 2 consecutive months. We call these clinics CRH users. Controls are those that never use CRH services for primary care during our study period. Now, that means that there are facilities that use CRH, but not enough to be considered meaningful use. Those facilities were excluded from the study, and we also excluded sites with less than 450 enrollees. The reason we excluded these smaller sites is because 450 enrollees essentially represents about a half of a full-time equivalent for an advanced practice provider. And we thought that would just be not representative of what's happening at the clinic. Our access to care outcomes. We have 3 of these. The first is established patient wait time. This is the time from the patient indicated date to their completed appointment date. And established patients are those who are receiving care at the VA. A new patient wait time is very similar, except these are patients who are new to VA. They haven't had ongoing care. This is the time from their date of appointment created to the date the appointment was completed. And then we also have a measure of clinic capacity known as third next available. This is the average time to third open appointment in the provider's clinical schedule. In terms of the statistical analysis, so step one, what we're going to do is describe how much, who, and where CRH primary care visits were delivered. It'll give us an idea of the setting. And step two is among those propensity match clinics, CRH users and controls, we are developing a comparative interrupted time series based on a linear mixed effect model with random intercepts at the clinic level. Those random intercepts are to account for the repeated measurements at clinics. And we're going to include two-way and three-way interactions based on treatment status, so whether they're a CRH user or a control, the intervention status, whether it's pre or post implementation of the CRH, as well as time in months. So first of all, what happened among CRH users? So if we consider just the clinics that are using the CRH in a meaningful way, so again, they have 10 or more visits for two consecutive months, we summarize here the CRH visits that were occurring, as well as the non-CRH primary care visits that also occurred at those CRH user clinics. So you can see here, there was 115,062 visits provided through CRH. Those visits were provided to almost 47,000 patients, and it resulted in, on average, 2.45 visits per patient. In comparison, the non-CRH visits delivered amongst these clinics was approximately 1.48 million visits to 1.4 million patients, resulting in a little more than one visit per patient. The thing I find interesting here is we considered the distribution of those visits and where they were being delivered. So first of all, if we look at the site type, so we have community-based outpatient clinics, day medical centers, and other outpatient services. And what I want you to notice here is that when you're looking at CRH visits, they're primarily being delivered at a CBOC, whereas the visits that are not delivered through CRH at these same clinics is approximately evenly divided between CBOCs and VA medical centers. When we consider clinic size, you can see that CRH visits are provided, 20% of those are at small clinics compared to 5% of non-CRH visits, but they are mostly provided at medium clinics. And then when we consider the rurality of the clinic, you can see that the CRH visits are approximately 50-50 between clinics that are rural and urban. And this is very, very different compared to the visits delivered at these clinics that are not through the CRH, where predominantly 80% of those were developed in an urban clinic. Now let's get into the access metrics in these models. So rather than give you all of the numbers and create confusion, I thought I would just provide you with some overviews from those models. So let's first talk about patient wait time. Pre-implementation, established new patient wait times were not different among users compared to controls. When we looked at post-implementation of the CRH, users and controls both saw a decrease in established patient wait time, but the difference between those groups was not statistically significant. And the new patient wait times were also not significantly different. When you look at the pre to post implementation, the within treatment group differences before and after implementation were not statistically significant. When we look at third next available, which is that measure of capacity, we found that before implementation of the CRH, third next available wait times were worsening among CRH users, but they were not statistically different from control clinics. After implementation, third next available times improved among users as well as controls. And that improvement was not statistically different across the groups. When we look at pre to post implementation, the within treatment group differences, so within controls or within CRH users, those were statistically different, but they were not different across the two groups. There are a few points for us to consider here. So again, we are looking at 1 year pre-implementation and only 5 months post-implementation. This may indicate that the hubs are not agile enough yet in that early implementation phase, and that mixed method investigation showed only 11 clinics met high levels of progress in the first year, relatively low number of CRH primary care visits, but after our study, so after March of 2020, that accelerated quite rapidly. The difficulties in early adoption likely explain that decrease in third next available, but there's no appreciable difference in wait times that we could define in our study. And then I also wanted to briefly discuss the benefits for rural clinics. Overall, recall that 50% of CRH encounters occurred at a geographically rural clinic, compared to 20% at those standard primary care visits. We think that the CRH model offers the opportunity to improve access when discontinuity of care arises in these especially vulnerable rural locations. Care is predominantly offered via telemedicine, which can be difficult to attain in rural settings. But a strength of the CRH program is that in addition to VA video to home, we also offer care at the clinic, which has reliable broadband to sufficiently access the CRH program. And that's a key component of the model. In terms of limitations, the results from these VA clinics may not be generalizable to other healthcare systems using similar contingency staffing. We only exempt access as measured by wait times and appointment availability. There's other measures that could potentially be considered. And we did not determine the quality of care if the CRH visit successfully addressed the patient's concern. However, this is a great segue to my colleague, Shelley, who's going to talk a little bit about primary care and quality.
Thanks, Amy. Can you transfer control over to me for the slides?
You bet.
All right. Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Amy. So now, as Amy said, I am Shelley, and I'm going to talk about CRH and primary care quality. Let me make sure I can advance the slides. So CRH has important implications for quality of primary care delivery, but questions remain. It may improve access, but will telehealth services provide sufficient continuity, coordinated or comprehensive care, and will CRH services increase or decrease disparities in primary care quality? And these are the two overarching questions that we have used for our entire evaluation of the association of CRH and primary care quality. So what is the current evidence on telehealth and quality of care? Well, it's mixed. The rise in virtual care has led to a growing body of research reporting positive outcomes, including high patient satisfaction, reduced travel costs, and the successful management of chronic conditions from a distance. However, virtual care may also be related to lower quality of care. For example, its association with increased hospitalization for ambulatory sensitive conditions, as well as higher rates of unnecessary prescriptions of antibiotics, which leads us to our quality evaluation. To begin, we can see that CRH primary care is caring for many types of veterans. If you look at the age, gender, and racial and ethnic breakdown, it's pretty similar to what you would expect in a normal VA population. The average age is about 70 years old, the majority of the sample is male, and the majority of the sample is non-Hispanic white. And as Amy alluded to earlier when she was looking at clinic rurality, if we look at veteran rurality, we also see that the majority of these veterans live in rural or highly rural areas. And the number of CRH primary care visits that they receive is most often 2. We also see that CRH is providing care for commonly managed primary care conditions. These are the top 5: essential primary hypertension, type 2 diabetes mellitus, health counseling for things such as tobacco cessation, hyperlipidemia, and low back pain. And when we looked at the association of CRH early implementation and primary care quality measures, we used a comparative interrupted time series design, which Amy went over with you earlier, also using propensity matched CRH sites and non-CRH sites, to identify whether chronic disease quality measures at clinic sites that implement CRH are similar to sites that did not implement CRH. And I'll refer you to a prior cyber seminar, that Dr. Reddy and I did in October of 2023 for more details. But the main findings that we found were that primary care quality measures at CRH sites undergoing early implementation of the program are essentially the same as our matched comparator sites that have not implemented CRH. We also didn't find any significant differences in quality outcomes among sites that serve a high level of minority veterans. And these findings provide early support that telehealth interventions like CRH can improve access to primary health care in a variety of settings, and it's especially true in these clinics that are experiencing staff shortages without impacting the quality of chronic disease care. But obviously, there are still questions that remain, and that leads us to the current and future analyses that focus on examining CRH and primary care quality from multiple angles. Our first aim is a continuation of our site-level analysis, where we look at CRH utilization level and its association with primary care quality. And our hypothesis here is that clinics that use a high proportion of CRH services, what we're calling high engagement, will have similar primary care quality outcomes compared to clinics that use a low proportion of CRH services, what we're calling low engagement. And then we're going to transition from a site level perspective and move to a veteran level individual analysis, where we examine CRH utilization and the association with primary care quality among veterans with hypertension and or diabetes mellitus. And this aim is split into two parts. The first is a veteran level comparison between veterans with CRH utilization and veterans with no CRH utilization. Our hypothesis here being that veterans diagnosed with these conditions who receive CRH primary care services will have similar quality metrics as those who have not received CRH primary care services. And the second portion, which is what Terrence will be discussing with you today, is a veteran level comparison between veterans with a high level of CRH utilization and veterans with a low level of CRH utilization. And our hypothesis here is that veterans with a greater proportion of CRH encounters, what we're calling high CRH intensity, will have no difference in quality measures compared to veterans with a lower proportion of CRH encounters, what we're calling low CRH intensity. And with that, I will turn the time over to Terrence to discuss CRH intensity and its association with primary care quality among veterans with diabetes and hypertension. Terrence, let me slide the slides over to you. Oh, I think you have them. Give that a try.
Yeah, thanks so much, Shelley. I think that worked out in terms of the transition. And from here, we'll be focusing on CRH and its association with primary care quality at the individual veteran level. So you can advance my slides. Great. And specifically, we were interested in veteran level of engagement with CRH and its association with clinical quality measures of two common conditions seen in primary care, diabetes and hypertension. In terms of our study design, this was a retrospective longitudinal cohort study looking at the time period between October 1st, 2022 through September 30th, 2023. We included veterans who had at least three primary care encounters, with one of them being a CRH primary care encounter. This was done to ensure the population we were studying were regular utilizers of primary care services. In terms of defining our exposure, we defined CRH intensity as a term to capture the veteran level of engagement with CRH delivered care. And this was operationalized by taking the number of CRH visits and dividing by the number of total primary care visits, which resulted in a number that gives the proportion of total primary care visits that were CRH primary care visits. And this was measured within the study period we had defined. We then separated CRH intensity into tertiles, resulting in low, medium, and high CRH intensity groups. And these numbers here reflect the breakdown of what defined low, medium, and high CRH intensity. In our analyses, we compared the different clinical quality outcomes by these different CRH intensity groups, with the low intensity group serving as the reference. In terms of outcome measures for quality, we utilized the same ones that were used in the clinic level analyses that Shelley described earlier, which are the electronic quality measurements, or EQMs. And here I'll dive a little bit into the details of what these are. They're analogous to the HEDIS quality metrics that are widely used and researched outside of the non-VA setting. And why we use them here, EQMs, was because they're well-established measures, and they've been shown to be strongly associated with actual patient outcomes, and several of them have high relevance to primary care quality. And so we use the subset of the available EQMs that focused on ones that cover high priority primary care conditions. They have strong associations with patient outcomes, like I mentioned, and are well established both inside and outside of the VA as being core measures of primary care clinical quality. As I introduce them, I want to highlight that there are two main types of these measures that we examined. Here, the measures listed are all measures related to diabetes care and represent clinical processes, such as ordering certain tests or prescribing certain medications. And these are based on recommended clinical guidelines. So, for example, our first measure listed here, the hemoglobin A1C annual measurement, is a blood test that's used routinely to monitor how well a patient's diabetes is controlled and should be, in theory, checked at least once a year for the most in most cases of patients with diabetes. In all of these measures, we were interested in measuring the predicted probability of a veteran completing these processes. Process measures, and the higher score indicates the desired outcome. The other major type of measure I want to highlight is an intermediate outcome, which is a little further downstream of the process measures I previously described, in that it is closer to a clinical outcome, such as mortality, for example. Here, these data are based on actual lab or clinical measurements from individual veterans. The first two of these measures listed relate to diabetes, while the third measure relates to hypertension. In terms of our statistical analysis, we used multivariable logistic regression to estimate associations between CRH intensity and clinical quality metrics in diabetes and hypertension. The covariates specified in our model include age, sex, race, and ethnicity, marital status, rurality, drive distance to the nearest VA primary care clinic, Gagne score, which is a type of comorbidity score, and socioeconomic status index. The outcomes that I'll present will be predicted probabilities of meeting the criteria for corresponding quality measure at the end of the study period. And a p-value of less than 0.05 was used to assess for statistical significance. And now I'll transition to showing our findings. For our cohort, we excluded veterans who did not receive at least 3 primary care visits or any CRH visits. Again, we felt this was important to identify a group of veterans who were receiving primary care consistently. We ultimately included about 51,000 veterans in our study cohort. Because many veterans have both diabetes and hypertension, we created 2 groups for our analyses. The first group was our diabetes cohort, which consisted of veterans who had only diabetes, as well as diabetes alongside hypertension diagnosis. The second group was our hypertension cohort, which consisted of veterans who had only hypertension, as well as veterans who had both hypertension and diabetes. In terms of demographic characteristics across the different CRH intensity groups, we observed that age, sex, race, and ethnicity breakdowns were fairly similar across these groups. Here I'm only showing the diabetes cohort, but these breakdowns are similar in the hypertension cohort. We also observed that veterans in the high CRH intensity group, that is having more CRH visits during the study period, tended to have higher comorbidity scores and live in more urban areas. And here you can see that reflected with the Gagne scores in the last row. All right, so transitioning into our results from our regression, our main analyses, we observed that high CRH intensity was associated with small but statistically significant improvements in two of our process measures. And that was screening for nephropathy, as well as statin therapy. When we looked at the intermediate outcomes, we also we found that high CRH intensity was associated with poorer outcomes for these intermediate outcomes. And this was the case for both the diabetes-related measures, that is the hemoglobin A1C, poor control, as well as less than optimal blood pressure, as well as hypertension related measure. All right, and taking these all together, there are some limitations of our study. Amy kind of pointed to one in the access portion, in that some of these results might be difficult to generalize outside of a VA setting. This is an observational study that only shows associations and not necessarily causal effects. But another limitation was that these poor quality in intermediate outcomes may reflect gaps in coverage that CRH is trying to fill, and we might just need a longer study period to more precisely measure the effects of CRH. So in conclusion, talking both about access and quality evaluations, one big takeaway was early implementation of the CRH program did not worsen access to primary care. There were no significant impacts on the wait times through appointment availability, though the appointment availability improved post-implementation among both CRH users and match controls. At the clinics that implemented CRH, primary care quality metrics were similar to match clinics that did not implement CRH. In addition, there were no differences in results among clinics that served a high proportion of minority veterans. And then finally, increased CRH intensity may be helpful for improving process outcomes, but more limited in improving intermediate outcome measures in veterans. From our results, we reflected on what the implications for the CRH program more broadly could be. With our evaluation of quality at the individual veteran level, our results highlight some nuances of continuity, which was referenced before as being an essential element of primary care and chronic disease management, and how this may intersect with CRH. Because CRH still operates within the VA, it would preserve informational continuity, and given that the patient's medical records are available to the new CRH provider. And certain process measures that we described previously, like ordering certain blood tests, they can be achieved by having this informational continuity preserved. However, the interpersonal continuity, that is the personal patient provider relationship, is disrupted when a veteran loses their usual source of primary care and transitions to a CRH provider. And this may make it more challenging to achieve certain outcomes such as optimal blood pressure control or optimal diabetes control, which are intermediate outcomes, and they often benefit from this longitudinal patient-provider relationship. So with this in mind, we hope that our results of how CRH affects access and clinical quality inform the current as well as future implementation of CRH. In terms of next steps for access, as Amy mentioned, looking at the late implementation or maintenance phase of CRH is something that their team is planning on doing, as well as utilizing a time-varying analysis modified by existing primary care provider gaps. In terms of the quality evaluations, we plan on doing a sub-analysis to better explore whether the effect of CRH on clinical quality varies by different patient characteristics. We're also planning on doing an evaluation of primary care quality as the CRH program moves into the late implementation and maintenance phase. And then we also plan on evaluating the quality in the CRH mental health program. So with that, we thank you for your time and attention. We also want to thank our access and quality teams that have helped make this work possible. And here we've included a link and information on prior presentations of CRH for those who are interested and have further questions. Again, thanks for your time and happy to take questions from the audience.
Fantastic, thank you. For the audience, please use that Q&A screen in WebEx to submit your questions in. That is located near the lower right-hand corner of your screen. Sometimes it says Q&A, sometimes it's a question mark with a box around it. But that's where you can submit those questions in. Right now, we do not have any pending questions and we have a ton of time for questions. So please, if you have any questions, get those submitted in right there. Okay, here we go. I am a CRH RN for primary care. Yes, these studies were in the beginning of CRH. Since this study, CRH has grown significantly throughout the U.S. We have shown regarding HEDIS measures, significant improvement with chronic disease management and preventative care. Wait times have significantly improved. Then, are extremely satisfied, if not more satisfied, with the CRH.
Thank you for that comment, Robin. I agree that I think that as we do further analysis with as the CRH program has evolved and as it moves into later implementation and maintenance, we'll probably be able to pick up some of those more nuanced findings. Amy, did you have anything to add or Terrence?
I was just going to say that that is wonderful to hear from the field that all of these things are being improved and that you're seeing these improvements. And we're hoping to show those as well in this post-implementation timeframe where CRH has been used for a longer period of time and all the kinks have been worked out.
Fantastic, thank you. The next question here, is there any data on how efficient CRH is compared to non-CRH? For example, number of encounters per day compared between the two.
I don't think that we've had, this is Shelley, sorry. I don't think that we've looked at a direct comparison between CRH efficiency and non-CRH efficiency. I know that in the early implementation, the guidance was that the appointment length times were longer for CRH visits compared to non-CRH visits. So if you looked in the early implementation phase, you probably would see that CRH, as far as number of visits completed, was less efficient, but this is just anecdotal, not from any rigorous study. But we haven't looked at that in the later implementation and maintenance now that the guidance has changed and now that the appointment length times are similar between CRH and non-CRH. That's definitely something that we can take back to the team and consider doing some further analysis on. Thank you for that suggestion.
Thank you. The next question here, what are your thoughts on why CRH care did not appear to increase access to care?
Thank you so much for this question. So we have thought about this quite a bit because when we originally started doing this study, we had expected to see an improvement. And First of all, I think the first thing to remember is that we're only looking at 5 months post-implementation because of the COVID-19 pandemic and how dramatically it affected wait times. So I think that's one piece. I think that we're going to see potentially more differences in the post-pandemic timeframe study that we're working on right now. But I also think that with the goal of CRH, I think the goal of CRH is really to maintain access to care, not necessarily to improve it and make it better than those clinics that are not using the CRH. And so to me, even though we're not seeing significant statistical differences between CRH users and control clinics, the fact that those 140 some thousand veterans are receiving care that they otherwise would not have received or maybe had a delay in care, to me, that's a success story.
Great, thank you. The next question here. You mentioned one potential limitation of CRH when veterans have to get a new provider. However, many VA clinics, especially rural clinics, often have significant staff turnover. Will you be studying the possibility that CRH providers might turn over less frequently than local clinic providers? Veterans seeing CRH providers in the future might actually get to see their same provider more so than if they were at local clinics in the future.
I can answer this one. This is Terrence, and thank you so much for that question. Such an important point that was made. And that is one limitation of the analyses we presented today, was not looking at provider level characteristics, but something absolutely incredibly interesting in terms of the, you know, kind of CRH providers, if they're actually potentially providing a little more continuity than veterans might see otherwise, especially in certain like rural clinics. And so I don't have the answer, an answer today, but I think definitely something that we will take into our future analyses and focusing on some of the characteristics of CRH providers and also looking at those characteristics to see if that might influence certain quality or access measures.
Great, thank you. Next question here. The slide showed 2.45 visits per patient versus 1.06 for non-CRH. Thoughts on the reasons for this difference?
Oh my gosh, I love this question. Thank you for asking this. So I think that the reason we see that difference is the patients who are getting the CRH visits, they seem to be getting more than one CRH visit, which I think really speaks to the importance of the CRH program and that those patients would otherwise not be receiving that care. I think the reason, though, that you see a 2.5 visit rate among those who are using CRH visits versus those who are using a more standard in-person clinic visit is that the patients who are getting those clinic visits are potentially really different in some ways from the CRH patients. If you've worked in primary care research before or in the primary care field, you know that there's a lot of patients in primary care who come all of the time. I used to work in labor pool at the Iowa CVA during the pandemic, and there were certain people we would see every single week, and they would have multiple visits every single day with all of their multitude of providers. But you also have patients in that group who maybe come in just once a year or once every 2 years just to stay on the VA rolls. And those people really push those averages down. So I think that's my personal opinion, I think that's the reason for that difference.
Great, thank you. Oh, we got a comment in here. Thank you for that explanation regarding the effect on access. I was wondering about the pandemic effect.
Yes, so the pandemic had a major effect on wait times. So patients just weren't coming in, and so you could get appointments pretty much whenever you wanted. So you didn't really have to wait very much at all. It took like approximately 6 months after the pandemic for those wait times to return towards normal-ish levels. And so the work that we're doing right now is looking at access to care and the use of CRH services are not at the clinic level over time, starting in September of 2020. So about 6 months after the pandemic. So I'm really excited that someday we'll get to share those results with all of you.
Great, thank you. Next question here. Have we considered the impact of the Mission Act and other community care eligibilities on improving access to care through the CRH?
This is another great question. So in primary care, we have started doing a little looking to see if there is potentially a substitution effect where if a clinic is using CRH, are they using less community care? So we are considering that. The primary issue with looking at community care within the primary care context is that overwhelmingly primary care is delivered at the clinic and not through the CRH and not through the community. That's really good for patients because again, primary care is a really important gatekeeper towards getting other specialty care or care in other clinical environments within VA. And so by keeping that care within VA, we're potentially reducing fragmentation of care by not sending them into the community. So, but I do think that there are some people interested in looking at community care in other settings. Shelley, do you recall that conversation? I feel like someone was wanting to talk about community care with specialty care.
Yes, I do vaguely recall that conversation, but I don't have any additional details right now. But that's something we can definitely take back to the group and follow up with you for more information.
Great, thank you. The next question here. In PC, CRH, PCP, Vision 1 sees veterans 1 hour per visit and established veterans 30 minutes per day. CRH stays at sites up to 2 years, and we have been known to stay 4 years because of the severity of shortage and inability to hire at the sites.
This is Shelley. Thank you for that comment. We've heard similar things. There's a lot of heterogeneity across sites based on the individual veteran needs of their populations. But it's definitely good to hear that you have that experience. And it kind of goes also back to the other question about why CRH patients are receiving more visits than non-CRH visits. I think one of the things we've talked about, and Amy, correct me if I'm wrong, is that patients who are receiving CRH often have been without primary care for a significant amount of time prior to CRH coming into a site due to those staffing shortages. And so it may be that this is catch-up care. They're receiving more visits because the care that they are receiving now is to make up for the care that they haven't received in the past. So that's another potential reason why we're seeing that association.
Great, thank you. The next question here. Have we considered the impact of the Mission Act and other community care eligibilities on improving access to care through the CRH?
I think that's a duplicate question. But yes, we have looked at community care, improving access and whether or not there's a substitution effect. That's some work that the Iowa City Access team is wrapping up now.
Thank you. Yeah, I got halfway through the question like, this sounds really similar.
Right.
Next question here. Has CRH primary care observed demand for visits outside of traditional clinic hours? If so, has offering after-hour clinic hour or weekend appointments supported access?
Amy, do you know? I don't know that we have any quantitative data about demand for visits outside of traditional clinic hours. I think anecdotally, we've heard that some CRHs are providing those services, especially for hubs that are providing services to clinics that are outside of their time zone. So technically, it would be outside of their own clinic hours. But I don't know that we have any quantitative data and anything that would support any evaluation of whether that increases access or not. Amy, do you know?
Yeah, I know that's not something that we have considered. So what we've mostly done is aggregated data up to the clinic and the month level, which we haven't considered when the visits are provided. But I think if you go down to the veteran level data, we have information about appointment dates and times. So it's something one could consider in the future, potentially. I think the biggest issue is that physicians have a lot of autonomy in how they provide CRH and how they run their clinical resource hubs and how they provide services to those folks and which services they provide. And so the biggest problem with trying to look at something like that would probably have to do with the dynamics of how hubs are choosing to provide care and whether enough hubs are providing care outside of traditional clinic hours. But I think it's a really interesting question, and it's making me really wonder. So I really appreciate you asking that.
Great, thank you. The next question here, do you have any data on veteran acceptance of CRH? At some sites, we see veterans who are okay with one or two CRH visits, but then decline in favor of in-person care. Some will delay their care until an in-person provider becomes available.
Thank you for that question. We do have another group with another evaluation team that is looking specifically at veteran level satisfaction and veteran level feedback on CRH care. And they've had a couple of other cyber seminars that they have given that may answer that question. I know that from the most recent data, it seems that overall that veterans feel that CRH is acceptable and they're satisfied with it. And there's a number of domains that are asked, I believe, in the SHEP and B-Signal surveys that come after CRH visits or non-CRH visits. But I can't remember off the top of my head what domains were different and what domains were the same between the CRH and non-CRH groups. So if you go to our SharePoint site, if you're internal to the VA, you can go to the SharePoint site and see those prior cyber seminars and publications. And if that doesn't answer your question, please reach out to us individually and we can put you in contact with the other eval team or try to figure out how to answer your question.
Great, thank you. The next question here, do you hypothesize that CRH care over time may have a beneficial effect on veteran health outcomes?
Well, that's a great question. Terrence, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I think that's something that I'm deeply interested in. And I think the answer might be potentially. I think as Shelley alluded to, are we seeing somewhat of a mixed effect, at least at the individual level analyses that we showed today? Is that because it's CRH and this in this case is almost trying to play catch-up care and kind of fill gaps? And you know, I think part of that informs why we want to look over a later time period as well as later into the implementation in the late implementation and maintenance phase to see if kind of over time, do we see improvements in certain clinical quality metrics? And so I think that's a really interesting area that we're planning on investigating further.
Thanks, Terrence. I agree with that too. Amy, did you have anything to add?
I don't think so, but I appreciate you asking the question.
Great, thank you. The next question here, are there any studies on workload or burnout among providers in CRH versus non-CRH roles?
Yes, I can take that one. Actually, I just heard yesterday from that same eval team that I was referring to earlier. I don't believe that this data has been presented yet, but we had a meeting yesterday, and their most current analysis showed that providers who are providing CRH care have reduced levels of burnout compared to providers who are not providing CRH care. And so more details will come from that, I'm sure, soon. But I can say, at least preliminarily, yes.
Great, thank you. Next question here. CRTH PCP go on site every 3 months. Priority is for opioid, women, and then those that are really demand, and those that really demand face to face.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I completely understand that question.
She sends in a clarification. That is the last comment or question that we received in. Oh, we just got another question here. Robin, if you want to send in the clarification on your question, we can get to that one next. Next question here. Do you have any thoughts about what additional care or services would be most beneficial to provide through the CRH?
I think that what's interesting now is the specialty services. I'd be interested to hear what Amy and Terrence feel about this as well. But I mean, we're primarily looking at primary care and mental health. But there's a lot of interesting work being done in specialty care, especially for areas that don't have access to certain types of specialties, like cardiology and others. Cardiology comes to the top of mind, but there are definitely others. Terrence or Amy, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, Shelley, I completely agree. I was actually thinking of specialty care as you were speaking, and in that I think another important function of primary care is serving as that care coordinator for other teams, other care teams that the veteran may have, and you know, if they have specialists. And I think maintaining timely access to primary care is by extension also helping them maintain access to specialty care. And that wasn't kind of the focus of what we presented today, but I certainly think that you know, they're very much related. And, you know, I'm also interested in learning more about kind of the work that the specialty care CRH team is doing.
I would agree. And the only thing I would add is that one of the strengths of the CRH program, I think, is its flexibility to provide care that's relevant to that particular vision. And so what a VISN needs in one location may not be what another VISN needs. So I feel like this question is very insightful, but it also really depends on the needs of the folks that the hub is serving.
Thank you. And Robin replied with what she sent in. It was just a comment.
Thanks, Robin, for clarifying that.
And one more comment. CRH specialty care is growing. Cardio, pain management, nephrology, mental health, and more. It continues to grow with specialties.
Yeah, thank you, Robin. It's really going to be exciting to see what CRH specialty care can do and what the impacts are from it.
And that is
oh, sorry, Heidi. I was just going to say one clarifying point because I am not the expert on burnout. I did hear from one of our eval teams. They wanted me to clarify that for the AES results, that they didn't directly compare CRH and non-CRH workforce, but what they did see is that clinics that use CRH saw mitigations in burnout. So I guess I can't say that CRH providers have lower levels of burnout, but it does, CRH does seem to mitigate burnout. So they just wanted me to clarify that point so I wasn't saying something erroneous. So thank you to Dr. Stockdale for pinging me and letting me know that I needed to clarify that.
Great, thank you. We are back at the top of the hour. I just want to check if any of our presenters have any closing remarks they'd like to make before we close the session out.
No, I just want to say thank you for everyone's really insightful questions and to Terrence and Amy for co-presenting.
Thank you. I want to thank all of our presenters for taking the time to present, to prepare and present today. We really do appreciate your time that you put into this. For the audience, when I close the meeting out, you will be prompted with a feedback form. We would appreciate if you took a few moments to fill that out. Thank you everyone for joining us for today's HSR Cyber Seminar, and we hope to see you at a future session. Have a great afternoon, everyone.